Today's Daf Yomi Shir is the Gemara in Shabbos, which the Daf is actually going to be Daf Yud Tes, but we're going to do a little bit more, and we're going to be, as I mentioned, try to keep up pace so that by the end of Pesach, we have all the Shirim done by learning a little bit more now. Today is a yard site. We're learning Le'ilui Nishmas, Minerva Pinsky, Mamtzi Bas Reuven Ben Sion, Ve'Esther. All the Neshamas that we've learned for should have an Aliyah. So we begin. We left off yesterday at the bottom of Yud Ches Omid Beis by the two dots about 10 lines up from the bottom. And we quote the Mishnah. The Mishnah said, Beishame Yomim Ein Mochrin. We had a discussion in the Mishnah about what you're allowed to do right before Shabbos starts, whether you can sell something to a non-Jewish person or not. Can you give something to a non-Jewish person or not? Beishame had said no. They were concerned with, as we discussed previously, with Shvisas Kalim, that's a Din Daraisa, and Beisela was not. So we begin the Braisa. Tana Rabbanan. Beishame Yomim Lo Yimkor Odom Chetzel Lenochri. Beishame says you're not allowed to go and sell an item to a Nochri on Erev Shabbos, lo yashilenu, and you're likewise not allowed to go and lend it to him, lo yalvenu, which is also a term for lending. Rashi points out over here that the difference between lo yishalenu is shelo is dovor hachozer be'en. When you give somebody a lawnmower, you expect to get back that same lawnmower. So you, quote, do she'ela, you lend him your lawnmower. When we say you lend somebody $100 in Hebrew, they would use the term halva. That's bedover hanitan lohutsa. I will lend you in English $100, but I don't expect to get that same $100 back. You'll pay me back $100, but it's obviously going to be different bills. So in Hebrew, we use the term halva when you give something and you don't expect to get the same thing back. And you use the term she'ela when you give something and you get the same thing back. So neither of these two is allowed to be done on Erev Shabbos going to Beis Shammai. You can't sell it to it. You can't give it to him in either form. Either giving him the lawnmower type of an item or giving him the $100. You're not allowed to do either of those two. You can't give it to him as a present either. Unless, what is the rule? Beis Shammai says the only way you're allowed to do this, ela kedei she'agia lebeiso, that this person will have enough time Friday afternoon to get to his house. If he can get to his house, then nobody's going to think that he's doing your bidding, he's doing work for you. But if not, then there's a concern that people will see this and they'll say, wow, he's doing work for the Jewish person. Beisel says, I don't have to reach all the way to his house. As long as he gets, Rashi says, gets close to the city that he's going to. Shalir acheres, shanachri dar shom. Because he theoretically could put it in any place in that city. He doesn't have to carry it all the way to his house. So therefore, it clearly looks in that situation like he's not doing it on behalf of the Jewish person. According to this version of Beis Hillel, there is a more strict than the opinion that we're now going to give with Rabbi Akiva, who we'll see is giving a different version of Beis Hillel. So this Tanakama's version of Beis Hillel says that even according to Beis Hillel, you just can't give it to him a second before Shabbos and say that's fine. You have to give it to him enough in time before Shabbos that he can at least get to the city that he's going to. Beis Shammai says he has to get to the house in that city that he's going to. And now we have what seems like it's a third opinion, but we'll see it's really a second opinion within Beis Hillel. Rabbi Kiva Omer, Kadesh Yetzim Pesach Beso. Rabbi Kiva says that you're, as long as there's enough time for him to leave your house, so even 5 minutes before Shabbos starts, if you give it to him and he can leave your property, that's fine. Now, Omer Rav Yossi Rehuda, Rabbi Yossi Rehuda qualifies this statement of Rabbi Akiva, and he says it's not a third opinion. It's not Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel, and Rabbi Akiva. No, he says, Hein Hein Divri Rabbi Akiva, Hein Hein Divri Beis Hillel. This third opinion is not really a separate opinion. This is Rabbi Akiva's understanding of Beis Hillel. The first version that we had understanding was the Tanakama's version of Beis Hillel. And Lobo Rabbi Akiva, El Lafarish Divri Beis Hillel. Rabbi Akiva comes to disagree with the understanding that the Tanakama had over here of Beis Hillel. And he says, no, Beis Hillel, when they said, he just has to give it to him to get to the house, it means to get away from your house. It doesn't mean to get to the house of the city that the guy is going to. Now, the next price it says, Tana Rabbanon, Beis Shammai Omrim, Beis Shammai says, Lo yimkor adam chemtzol l'nochri, you're not allowed to sell your chomitz to a nochri, elm kin yodea bo, shiachala kodem ha-pesach, tiri Beis Shammai. This is a very important halacha within 30 days of Pesach now. We're getting close to Rosh Chodesh Nisan this week. Mitzvah Hashem, the Shas of Geula. Mitzvah Hashem, this should be a healthy period of time for all of us to have the Geula Shleima come. And Beis Shammai's opinion is, in this situation, when you're getting rid of your chametz, you can't give it to a nochri unless you know that he's going to eat the chametz up before Pesach, because otherwise he's going to have your chametz on Pesach, even though it's his now, but it looks like it's your chametz, and therefore you're not allowed to give it to him unless you know for sure that it will be destroyed, eaten up, taken care of before Pesach. That's the opinion of Beis Shammai. That's not how we paskin. We, of course, paskin like Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel Omrim, Kozman Shemutal Ochlo, as long as the chametz is allowed to be eaten by yourself, which normally means until the conclusion of the fourth hour of the day. But that's not technically correct. You actually can still sell the chometz to the nochri until the end of the fifth hour of the day, when it's also b'hanoah. So why does he use the term kozman shemutal ochlo, mutal mochro? As long as you can still eat it, you're allowed to give it to the non-Jewish person or sell it to the non-Jewish person, and that's considered getting rid of your chometz. It's not a problem. So the Mefarshim explained that this is because truma is still allowed to be until the end of the fifth hour, and that's why it uses the lashon over here, kozman shemutal ochlo, mutal mochro. Still, is some chometz can be eaten, even though not all chometz can be eaten. So therefore, at that point in time, you can still sell it to the non-Jewish person. Rav Yehuda adds on an additional caveat. We turn to the Amud Aleph, Yotes Amud Aleph. Yehuda says, Kutach HaBavli. Kutach HaBavli was a strange dish. We would not like it. It had dealt with spoiled foods, but they used it as some sort of a dip over here. And this was made basically with spoiled milk, and it had old bread inside of it. What we would say is a very unappetizing dish. In fact, the Gemara elsewhere tells us that not everybody could stomach this Kutach HaBavli, but in any event, this Kutach HaBavli had pure chametz in it. And he says, when you're giving Kutach HaBavli, or v'chol mine kutach, or any other types of dips like this, by definition, this is like a bottle of ketchup. You don't use a bottle of ketchup up one meal. It lasts for weeks or months. So therefore, this kutach habavli also lasted for a very long period of time. And this opinion says that also limkor lamed yom kolim and Pesach. You're not allowed to go and sell this to a non-Jewish person within 30 days of Pesach. More than 30 days before Pesach, so to say, we're not involved in Pesach and nobody's concerned about this. Therefore, it's not a concern. But within 30 days of Pesach, there are halachas, you have to start learning all about Pesach before the 30 days before Pesach, Shloshim Yom Lifnei HaChag, you have to start learning the halachas of the Chag, so we're focused on Pesach already at that point in time, and therefore, since this Kutach HaBavli, this pure chametz, is going to be in the possession of the guy, and it's yours originally, so this Tana, Rabbi Yehuda holds that you can't even sell it to him within 30 days beforehand, because it won't get all used up by that time. Next price, Torah Rabbanu knows the mizonos lifnei hakelah b'chotzer. You're allowed to go. Now here we're not talking about Pesach anymore. We're talking about Shabbos itself, and it's telling us that you're allowed to go and give to a dog. Not even talking about your dog. Your dog you have an obligation to feed, but the Gemara is here talking about that you can give any dog, even one that you don't have an obligation to feed, even though you normally aren't allowed to feed other animals. There's a special kula, if you wish, by dogs. The Mefarshim explained that a dog doesn't easily get food, and the Gemara says that even if a dog is not yours, and this is brought down halacha in Shulchan Aruch in Simen Shin Ches, Sif Katan Chav Tes, that even if a dog is not yours, but the dogs are Matsui Ba'ir, you are allowed to go feed them on Shabbos. Matzah Hashekel brings down from the Ramah, we see a riot to this, because we always say if something is Ru'uya L'Kelev, it's not considered Muktza, even though you don't have the dog. The fact that there are dogs around, that makes it that it's considered Ru'uya L'Kelev. So I heard once that some of the Mefarshim explained that because the dogs didn't bark in Mitzrayim, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them special things. It says, like, Kelev Tashlichu Noso, we give the Nevela meat to a dog, and as well, we're allowed to even feed a dog that's not incumbent upon us to feed on Shabbos, even though you're normally not allowed to feed other animals. In any event, this Bryce tells us over here that you're allowed to go put the food in front of the dog, and you're not concerned over here that maybe it's going to take it out of the yard, the Tala B'yotza, and it's going to go take it out, and he's kakalo. We don't have to be concerned about that. Likewise, Kayotzi Bo, Nosin Mizonis Levian Nochri. Likewise, you're allowed to even place food in front of a Nochri in your yard, even though the Tala B'yotza, he's going to go take it out as well. Ain't his kakalo. We don't have to be concerned about that. Now, you are allowed to feed a non-Jewish person on Shabbos, because of the principle of Eva, that if we don't give to an Ani who is a non-Jewish person, it's going to cause hatred. So therefore, halacha l'maisa, you're allowed to feed a non-Jewish person on Shabbos. As opposed to on Yontif, when you have to do an issa d'oraisa of cooking for him, you're not allowed to be mar b'shiurim for a non-Jewish person on Yontif. But on Shabbos, when you're not doing any cooking, there's no concern that you're going to be mar b'shiurim, you're going to make more for the non-Jewish person, because you can't make more for a Jewish person. So therefore, it is permissible on Shabbos to go give the nachri your food, if you wish to. Gemara now asks, Hasu Lamali, why do I need both cases? If I know I'm allowed to give to the dog, why would I think that I'm not allowed to go just give to the Nachri? If I'm not concerned that it looks like the dog is carrying my food outside, so why should I be concerned that the Nachri is carrying my food outside? Gemara says, Ma'u de Tema, I might have thought, Hai Rami Ale, Vai Lormi Ale, that I technically am responsible to give food to the dog, as we pointed out. You're entitled to go feed anybody's dog, Kamash Walan. That tells us, even though that you're not obligated to feed the Nachri, you're allowed to feed the Nachri. And therefore, there is no concern over here if you give the Nachri food in your yard and he carries it outside. Gemara continues, brings out another bride. So, Tana Rabbanon, Lo Yask, you're Adam Caleb, the Nachri B'Ever Shabbos. You now let go and rent your utensils or various kalim that you have to a non-Jewish person on Erev Shabbos. As opposed to Baravi B'Chamishi Mutter, but if you wish to, you're allowed to go sell it to him on either Wednesday or Thursday, Baravi or B'Chamishi, that is allowed. On Friday, there's a concern that it looks like he's doing your bidding. However, on Wednesday or Thursday, there is no such concern. Rashi points out that on Friday we're concerned, like I just said, Lasos ben Malocha be'er Shabbos, dinir ishimaskir lo l'tzorach Shabbos, because it looks like you're renting it to him to go and use it on Shabbos. And that's not allowed. Now, therefore, why is it permissible on Wednesday and Thursday? Wednesday and Thursday are also considered like Erev Shabbos. We have the idea that you make Havdalah up until Tuesday night, because that's going back on the previous Shabbos, and again from Wednesday morning and onwards. That's why we say in the Yom for Wednesday, L'chun Aranina, at the very end of the Yom, to remind us that we're starting to look towards Shabbos. But it's still far enough away that it doesn't look like you're asking the Nochri to do work for you on Shabbos, that he's doing your bidding on Shabbos. The Mefarshim asks a very interesting question. Once you tell me I'm allowed to go and do it on Thursday, so of course I can do it on Wednesday. So this is a very good question. The Sfas Emes brings down a very interesting teretz, and he says, no, on Wednesday you might have thought that that's not allowed, because it's so far from Shabbos that certainly if you're renting it to him then, he's going to definitely keep it for a while, and he's going to use it on Shabbos specifically, as opposed to on Thursday, people might think, well, you're going to get it back before Shabbos, so there's no concern about using it on Shabbos. So that's why the Sfas Emes says you need to mention both Wednesday and Thursday. Very beautiful idea. In any event, the Brisa continues and says, Kayotze bo, similarly, we have a similar idea, Eimishachin igros b'yad nochri b'Erev Shabbos. You don't send letters, igros are letters, in the hands of an ochri on Erev Shabbos, for the same reasoning as we just said, because you're afraid, it looks like he's doing your bidding on Shabbos, but if you give it to him on Wednesday or on Thursday, there is no problem. In that situation, it's too far removed from Shabbos. And they in fact said, Amar Lava Rav Yossi HaKohen, or alternatively, the Gemara says, Armilei Rav Yossi HaChosid. Now, there's an interesting Rabbeinu Chananel over here, all the way in the bottom, three lines into the widest lines of Rabbeinu Chananel, where he says, Amru Yosef HaKohen HaChosid. He says that it was one person. He was known as both Yosef Rav Yossi HaKohen, who was the Chosid, Rav Yossi HaKohen HaChosid. In any event, it was said about him, Shol Nimsuk Sabiyadu B'yad Nochem Yolim. He would never, in his whole life, give a letter to a Nochri, because he would be concerned that the Nochri would mail it on Shabbos, or do something with it on Shabbos. As Rashi says, in this way, Shalom Yilchenu B'Shabbos. He was extra careful never to have a letter of his in the hands of a guy, so it shouldn't look like the guy was doing his work for him on Shabbos. Brisa continues, Tana Rabba non e mishalchin igeres biyad nochri b'Erev Shabbos. This Brisa says also, you're not allowed to go and give a nochri something on Erev Shabbos unless Elim Kane kotzei slo domit, unless you gave him a set amount. Here's $5 and go deliver this letter. Now, you're not telling him to deliver it on Shabbos. Now he's a worker who is being paid to go and deliver this letter. But he already got his money. He could deliver it Friday afternoon, before Shabbos. He could deliver it Shabbos. He could deliver it Sunday. You didn't tell him to do it on Shabbos. So in this way, the Braisa says it's permissible. Rashi brings down over here in the Dibur Masa Elim Kein Kotzes Bodomim, the Kiva, the Kotzes Lodomim, since you set a set amount over here, a specified amount, Tarach, he's doing it for his own. But the day Tarach, he's doing it for himself. But this is only according to Beis Hill. Beis Shammai lo modu b'kotzas. Beis Shammai wouldn't agree over here that if you gave him a set amount, $5 to do this, it would be okay. Even if you set a set amount, that people b'kotzas, plead it. Beis Shammai argues. This is no different than the other cases. Ela milso de Beis Hill lashmina. This is only according to Beis Hill, who says the Belav code says lo pligi the osir. Beis Hillel is the one that says, according to this Braisa, that if you don't set a set amount, then it's osir. But if you set a set amount, then it's mutter. But it's only according to Beis Hillel. Now the Gemara continues. Beis Shammai omrim kidei she'agila viso the Beis so. Beis Shammai says that you have to give him enough time. If you want to give him the letter, you have to give him enough time for him to go to his house. He has to be able to reach his house. Beis Hillel omrim kidei she'agila bayis asomach l'choma. The person only has to be able to get to the house that is at the beginning of the city, not to the actual house where he's going to. Now, Moore says, follow Kotzas, if this is going to Beis Hillel, why do you have to even reach that far? This was Rabbi Akiva's opinion before. This is the Tanakhama sheet that it only has to get to the house, the Somach Lechoma. But Rabbi Akiva said, no, it has to get to just out of your house. So how come over here he doesn't agree with that? So Rabbi Sheish says, Hachi, come on, this is what Rabbi Sheish explains. The Iblo Kotzas, this is talking about if you didn't set a set amount, if you didn't specify, here's $5 for this trip, then Beis Shammai is omrim achi gil beis. They don't change. Whether you're Kotzas or not, Beis Shammai says you can't give him any money. He has to be able to reach all the way to the house where he's going to go. Beis Hillel omrim, Beis Hillel says, no, achi gil beis is omrim chomo. If you didn't specify a set amount, then it's not enough that he just left your house. He has to be able to reach all the way to the point where he's in the next city over where he's going to and reach the first house over there. Mora says, well, wait a second. V'amris Reisha, Eimishalchim, the Reisha said, you're not allowed to go at all unless you set a set amount. That's what the Bryce said, Eimishalchim, Geras, we had Nochri, Elohim, Kain, Kotzes, Lodomim. So how can you tell me that Beis Hillel allows you to go all the way up until the first house? If you didn't set a set amount, then Beis Hillel seems to say you can't go at all. No, that's not a problem. Lokashimor says, That will depend. Hod kriya be doar b'masa, v'hod lo kriya be doar b'masa. It depends. There are two ways to understand this. Rashi has a slightly more complicated way to understand this. We'll mention that first. Rashi says over here that the doar, he doesn't even call it base doar, is the sultan's house. Sultan ir, v'lo regil l'shlochi gros. That's like the major government place. So the stam, all the letters are going over there. So if there's a major government place over here, then you go and can send it even if you weren't katzas, because we're not going to be looking around where to go. He knows where to go, and therefore it's not a problem. As long as he has time to get there, it's not a problem. As opposed to if there is no government place over there, you're just looking for the person who's in charge. He may be here, he may be there, and therefore it could end up traveling on Shabbos. And therefore, unless you were katzas, unless you set a set amount, you can't assume that it'll get there by Erev Shabbos, by the time it comes Shabbos, and therefore, in that situation, it's no good if you were not katzis at all. That's the way Rashi understands this. Others understand it more in along the terms of Beis Doar, means like there's a post office. So if there's a post office, you know exactly how long it takes to get there. But if it's not a set post office, then you have a problem. Read out another braisa. Tana Rabbanan, ein mafligim b'sfino, pachos migimo yamim. Similar to the idea that we just had, this gimo yamim, you can do something on Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday in certain situations. So the braisa now tells us a famous braisa about traveling on a boat. So being on a boat has potential problems to be on a boat on Shabbos. We'll see a number of different shittas in the Rishonim that are all brought down la halacha, and many of them are not mutually exclusive, and many of them may not apply nowadays. In any event, the Braisa tells us that more than 3 days before Shabbos, you're allowed to go on a boat, but less than 3 days, pachos mishlosh yomim, kol mishabbos, you're not allowed to go in mafligi misvina. Mafligi means to go out on the boat. Rashi says it means mafrishim min habayabosh liyam. And he says this lashon over here of leaving haflaga svina is because alshem shemaflig atzul min hayishuv. You're separating yourself from the ground and you're going out into the water. Or Reni Yaakov Shemati says in the Gemara in Erevin, she'em tziyuso shayam nikra pilgus. The middle of the ocean is called pilgus. And therefore, apeloshon las, pilgus. So there over here, mafligin is this lashon over here that we use. In any event, why is the reason you can't do this? So the Rishonim over here bring down many reasons for this. In the order that it's given in the Shulchan Aruch, you have first the Rabbeinu Chananel right here on our daf, four lines into the widest lines of Rabbeinu Chananel. He says, Yesh mishomim bizman shegosheshes, so it's going to touch the ground, and therefore you're going outside the tchum. Ve'em b'mayim yud tvachim, mishum gzeres tchumim naguba. So he says, if you're going in very shallow water, so then you have a problem with tchum, that's why you can't go on the boat. But if you're more than Yutvachim, if the boat's higher up than the bottom of the ocean, then there is no such a gezerah. And he says, that's why you can go out onto large waterways, it's not a problem. That's the first one that's brought down in Mishnah Berurah from the Rabbeinu Chananel. The second one that's brought down in Shulchan Aruch is from the Baal HaMor, Rav Zerachya Halevi. And his reasoning is, because you're putting yourself in a matzav where you're going to have to go and have people do malacha on you to save you. There's all sorts of things that need to be done on the boat that are assumed deraisa, and now you're putting yourself in that matzah that they're doing that on your behalf. The next one is the Ramban, who says, the non-Jewish person is going to do malacha for you. He's going to do various types of tying, and he's going to do various types of knots, etc., and other chilul Shabbos, and he's not allowed to do that on your behalf. This is different than the Baal HaMor. The Baal HaMor is saying that you're going to do them, and the Ramban is saying somebody else is going to do them for you. The next one brought down in Shulchan Aruch is the Rif. The Rif says over here that you're going to become seasick, and you're not allowed to put yourself into a matzav where you're not going to be able to observe the Shabbos properly. And the final one over here that's brought down in Shulchan Aruch is right on the daf over here is Tosos. And he says, it's a problem, mishum shot, because it's going to lead to swimming. He's going to have to maybe go and swim on Shabbos, and that's not allowed. In any event, there are many other reasons given as well. The bottom line is that everybody agrees over here that the Gemara is telling us that you're not allowed to go and do this. But under what circumstances? So the Gemara continues and says, "Bamed dvarim amurim, under what circumstances can't you do this?" That's ledavar rishus. If you're going for a voluntary reason, you're going on a cruise, you're going for pleasure. Aval dvar mitzvah shapir dami. But if you're going to do a pigeon shvuyim, if you're going to do redeeming of captured people, if you're going for some other dvar mitzvah, then it's allowed. What should you do in this situation? You should go up to the captain of the ship and tell him, listen, I want you to not travel on Shabbos. Nope, he's not going to listen. Venu Shoves, not a problem. Divrei Rebbe, you did what you had to do. No, if he decides to still travel on Shabbos, you don't have any concerns. You don't have to do that. That's very, very nice, but you don't have to do that. And he adds, and to go a short trip, like a ferry trip, from Tzur to Tzidon, Rashi says, it's only a one-day trip. And people would travel there because that was the market day. So you're allowed to go and do that. That's not a concern. Do you have to go tell the captain? So in Shulchan Aruch, it's worth knowing the Mishnah Berurah that indeed one should tell them that you would like them not to travel on Shabbos, but most of the Achronim disagree, and they seem to say that it's a mitzvah, go tell the Kavim, but you're absolutely not mechuyev to do so, and it's not ma'akev if you didn't do so. Gemara continues with another brisa. Tana Rabbanon, ein tzarich ala yoros, ein tzarich ala yoros shel nochu im pachos mishloshi yom kol mishabbos. If we're going to siege against our enemies, we're going to put down a siege against the city that our enemies are in, so you should also try not to do this on Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday. You should do this before then. There are posts that say, when we say Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, 3 days, it doesn't really mean that. Some say it means only Thursday and Friday because you include Shabbos in the 3 days. In any event, the simple understanding is means you shouldn't do it on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. You should do it beforehand. But once you've done this, but if you did start the siege in a time that it was permissible, you don't have to lift it up on Shabbos. Others explain, even if you started when it wasn't permissible, you don't have to lift it up on Shabbos. And this was the opinion of Shammai as well. The Pasuk says, Ad Riditah, you must do battle against the enemy until you have defeated them. So this means, Afilu b'Shabbos, even if it's on Shabbos. That's what the words Ad Riditah mean. Now, quote the Mishnah, we said in the Mishnah, Amar Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, no again, hayu v'chulei. So we said there that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel said, not even though I'm from Beis Hillel, we hold in our house to do like Beis Shammai, and we wouldn't give to the launderers the white garments more than within 3 days of Shabbos, because those white garments took a much longer time to clean, and it would be clear that if you're giving it to the guy, you do your bidding on Shabbos. Gemara brings down a brisa, Tanya, Amar Tzadik, which Tzadik said, it was the minog in the house of Rabbi Gamliel, shayu nosen clay loven lekovi shloshi yom kodesh Shabbos. Like our Mishnah said, it was the minog not to follow Hillel, their ancestor, but they followed Shammai over here, and you shouldn't have anything in the hands of the guy that could look like he's doing your bidding on Shabbos. So since these white garments took 3 days, so they would give it to them more than 3 days before Shabbos. But colored garments would sue him, I feel better Shabbos, because it didn't take that long to launder them, and therefore it wasn't a concern. We say, Tzadik says, from these actions, from these words of the house of Rabbi Gamliel, so what is the din? We learn, Shalavonim Koshim Lechapsin Yosim Natsum. We can see from here the principle that we've outlined already, that white garments take a longer or more difficult, they're harder to clean than the colored garments. That was Mistama, the garments in those days. I'm not sure why we would say anything one way or the other like that, but that was the way the garments were. Maybe it wasn't just the colors, it was the fabrics, etc. In any event, why is Gemara telling this? Why is this important? So Rashi brings down, in Dibur HaMaschul Midvarim Lamadnu, that there's an afkamin over here, L'schar HaKobes, if it would come up in a din, how much do you have to pay for colored versus white, so you can charge more for the white than for the colored. Abaya once gave a colored garment to a launderer. Katra is a koves. So Amalei, kama boisilave, he asked him, how much does this colored shirt that I gave you, how much does it cost to clean that? So the koves, the launderer, the katra, answered him, Amalei, kidichivra, I'll give you a bargain. This is the way the Ben Yoyod understands this. He said, I'll give you a bargain. I'll only charge you as much as the white garments cost. In other words, he made it look like he was doing him a favor, but really he was overcharging him. So Abai said, nah. Kivar kadamuch rabbanon. The rabbanon beat you to it. They already taught us that white garments are more costly than colored garments. So when you're saying me, you'll give me a deal, and you'll only charge me as much as the white garments, I know that you're rooking me. Gemara continues on Rabbi. Since we're dealing with a koves, we discuss another din of a koves. I mind you, have mona lekatzra. If you're going to give your clothing, a mona is a garment, to the katzra, to the launderer, you should measure it beforehand. B'mishcha ne sivle, u'b'mishcha nishkomine. Go and see what the size of the garment is when you give it to him, and see what the size of the garment is when you get it back. Why? What are you concerned about over here? Di tofe, because if it got bigger, so then you know that he made a mistake. He stretched it out. Afsede de maskle. Somehow in the laundering process over here, he stretched it out and he ruined your garment. Be butzer. And if you get it back too shrunken, so then you know, afsede de katze. He shrunk it. In other words, Rashi says he put in too much hot water and therefore got shrunken by the hot water. Rashi says, the katze beroskin. It got shrunk because of the hot water. Now the Gemara continues and it says, it quotes the Mishnah of Veshavu Eilu Ve'elu She'toa Nin V'chulei. So we have over here that both Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel and the Mishnah said that, well, there was a big machlok between Beis Shammai and Hillel, what you can do on Erev Shabbos, they all agreed that if you had an olive press and you started pressing the olives before Shabbos, you're allowed to continue pressing them before Shabbos with these big beams, and that wasn't a problem, even according to Beis Shammai. So Gemara says, how come? Every other one, Beis Shammai said, no, you can't do this on Erev Shabbos because of this. You can't do this on Erev Shabbos because of this. But the olive press, you were allowed to do it on Erev Shabbos. How come they weren't concerned over there with Shvisas Kalim? So Gemara says, Umayshna Koriz Beis Abad, Vigulei Agas Lo Gozer. All the other things they were Gozer on, and this and that Gozer on. Gemara gives a very simple teretz. Hanach, the Yavu Lubi Shabbos, Mechayiv Chatas. All the other things, if you did them on Shabbos, you're actually Chayiv Korban Chatas. These are all Yisurim Deraisa. So therefore, Beis Shammai said, we're not going to let you do them on Erev Shabbos. I, some of Farshim say, but you're telling me on Erev Shabbos, it was a Din Deraisa that you can't do this because of Shvisas Kalim. So they point out that even if it is a Din Deraisa, but only when you're doing it on Erev Shabbos, it's not at that point a Din Deraisa. It's going to lead to a Din Deraisa. So the rabbis would go there, don't do this on Erev Shabbos. In any event, all the other ones that Beis Shammai said you can't do, that's because they're going to be involving Nisuchatas and Nisudaraisa. And therefore, Gozru Bu Beis Shammai, Erev Shabbos, Mechashecha. Therefore, they made this Gezerah on Erev Shabbos. However, with the Koriz Beis Abavi Gulei Agaz, in the case of the olive press, by you already squeezed out the juice from the olives, and now you're just putting the beams on to really get all the juice out. So in this situation, let's say you did this on Shabbos, the Yavadu B'Shabbos, you're not Chayv Chatas, lo Mechayv Chatas, because it's already coming out of the olives. And therefore, it's only an Issa D'Rabbanan. And in this situation, lo Gozru, even Beis Shammai says, in this situation, we didn't say you had to stop doing this on Erev Shabbos. Now the Gemara says, who is the author of our Mishnah? Mantana, who is the author in our Mishnah? The Komidi, the Osim Emele, Shapir Dami. That if something comes out on its own, like this olives that are already coming out, then you can do further and not be a problem if you do it on Erev Shabbos. So we'll have two opinions. The first opinion is, Amar Yosef Rechanina. Yosef Rechanina, he's an Amora, and he says that the author of our Mishnah is Rabbi Yishmael. It's the Tana Rabbi Yishmael, the Tanan, because we learned elsewhere that Rabbi Yishmael holds the following. If you have Hashum, Shum is garlic, or Boser. Boser is a very unripe grape, an immature grape. It doesn't really produce grape juice. It produces some sort of like a vinegary type of substance. And Hamalilos. Malilos are pieces of grain that also aren't ripe. And what do you do with all of these things, this garlic or these immature grapes or these immature grains? Shiriskon. Riskon means that you squeeze them in some way and you chop them up in some way that the juices from inside of them flow out. Rashi says they're all used for various types of dips. So in any event, if you do this, if you do this on Erev Shabbos, so then as long as it's Erev Shabbos, there's no problem. And Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Yigmor Mishatechshach, and it can continue to seep out, and you can use those juices for your dip, even though they seep out after Shabbos has started. That's exactly what our Mishnah was talking about. You have the olives that you started doing, quote, the risk on, you crushed them, and now you can continue to crush them every Shabbos because the juice is considered already having come out. There's no issa d'araisa. That's the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel. We turn to Yom Beis, Rabbi Akiva Omer. Rabbi Akiva says, lo yigmar. No, you're not allowed to do this. As Rashi says, also lanichem mibojom tachas kovdan. You can't put him underneath this heavy beam on Erev Shabbos, kidei ligmor, that it should continue pushing it out, mishatechshach, on Shabbos. You can't do this. Oh, so Rabbi Akiva is not the author of our Mishnah, and according to Rabbi Yosef Yehuda, Rabbi Yosef Yehuda, Rabbi Akiva is not the author of our Mishnah, but Rabbi Shmuel is the author of our Mishnah. That is opinion number one in our Mishnah. The second Amoraic opinion says, no, the Tana of our Mishnah is Rabbi Elazar. We have the Amora, the Rabbi Elazar. This is Rabbi Elazar ben Pidas. He says that the Tana of our Mishnah is Omar Rabbi Elazar. I'm assuming this is Rabbi Elazar ben Shamuahi. So the Amora, Rabbi Elazar ben Pidas, tells us that it is the Tana, Rabbi Elazar ben Shamuah. And where do we know that? It's not, because we have another Mishnah that tells us, Chalos Dvash Yeriskum Erev Shabbos. If you have a honeycomb, right? Chalos Dvash is basically a honeycomb, bee honey. So you go and crush this. Riskon means that you break it up, you crush it over here on Erev Shabbos. That's perfectly allowed. And the Yotzu Me'atzmon, and the additional honey that comes out on Shabbos, so now the Tanakhama says it's Osir. However, along comes Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua, Rabbi Elazar is Matir. He says you're Matir. This is exactly like our case, that the additional honey that comes out is not a problem. So again, we have Rabbi Yosef Rechanina that says the author of our Mishnah is Rabbi Yishmael, and we have the Amora, Rabbi Elazar, saying that the author of our Mishnah is the Tana, Rabbi Elazar. Why didn't each one say like the other opinion? Why didn't Rabbi Yosef Rechanina, my time of law mark, Rabbi Elazar? Why didn't Rabbi Yosef Rechanina say, this case of the honeycomb over here, the Chalos Tuvash, why didn't he like that and say that Rabbi Elazar, the Tana, was the author of our Mishnah? Shmuel says, no. Amar lachasam hu demeikara ochel b'sof ochel. In regards to this case over here with the honeycombs, you know why it's allowed? Because it didn't change. It was honey from the start, and it's honey from the end. It's the same thing. It's both an ochel already at the start, and it's an ochel at the end. Some say it's actually a drink. It's a mashke over here. In any event, it's the same. It hasn't changed from beginning to the end. As opposed to hocha, in the case over here of our olive press, so then hocha meikara ochel, it starts off as being an olive, v'hashto mashke, now it becomes a olive oil. And that is a different din. And therefore, he didn't think the opinion of Rabbi Yossi Ruchanina didn't think that Rabbi Elazar necessarily held like our Mishnah. No, what does Rabbi Elazar the Amora respond to this Taina of Rabbi Yossi Ruchanina as to why Rabbi Elazar the Tana isn't the author of our Mishnah? So Rabbi Elazar the Amora would answer, Rabbi Elazar Omar Lach, he would say, Hosh Aminah Lila Rabbi Elazar the Tana, Dafil Uzesin Valon and Nami Shabri. He says, no! The Tana, Rabbi Elazar, holds not only in the case of the honeycombs, but he holds in the case of our Mishnah as well, with the olives and grapes. They also were perfectly good once they're opened up. Why? Because the Haki also Rav Hoshai min Ardoi, when Rav Hoshai came from Ardoi, you know what he said? Also, Vaisi Masnis, he came with a Brisa. And this Brisa said, Beferish, like the Amora, Rabbi Elazar, said the Tana, Rabbi Elazar, holds. And what is that? If you crush them before Shabbos, the Yotzu Meyatzma, and they come out further on Shabbos, Asurin, according to the Tana Kama, but along comes Rabbi Elazar, the Tana, Rabbi Elazar, and also the Tana, Rabbi Shimon, Matir, and they both allow it. So therefore, you see clearly that Rabbi Elazar the Amora says that the Tana of Mishnah is clearly Rabbi Elazar the Tana, based upon this Brisa and based upon the Chalos Devash Brisa as well. This is a very good Tanya. So how come Rabbi Yossi ben Chanina didn't say this? So the answer is, Rabbi Yossi ben Chanina, Brisa lo shmile. He never heard this Brisa. Mentioned many times, Rav Shechter Shlita said that all the Amoraim knew all the Mishnais, but they didn't know the Brisas. So therefore, Rabbi Yossi ben Chanina was a great Amora, but he didn't know this Brisa. The Brisas were not as well known. And therefore, he didn't think that that was the way that Rabbi Elazar understood it. He said Rabbi Elazar only said it by Chalos Advash, but he wouldn't say it by olives and grapes. And therefore, that's why Rabbi Yossi ben Chanina didn't say the Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Elazar. No, we ask the other way now. Why didn't the Amora Rabbi Elazar give the teretz of Rabbi Yossi ben Chanina? Rabbi Elazar, my time law, my Rabbi Yossi ben Chanina, that it's Rabbi Yishmael. So why didn't he say that? So Rabbi Elazar the Amora would answer, Amalach, he says, La vit marlach, because we already answered that. What is Rabbi Yishmael's opinion? Rabbi Yochanan, that the situation of Rabbi Yishmael is talking about b'mechusarin dicha, when you're dealing with, it hasn't been, what we call dicha is like a crushing or a pounding. So then, then everybody would agree that you can't use that juice. If you continue to have it come out on Erev Shabbos with the beams, you can't use it. In that situation, both Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva would say you can't use it. But where do they argue, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel? At the next step, which is after they have been pounded already, so then they need to have shchika, grinding or mashing it up. And here, v'haninami kimusurim dichadamu, and the case in our Mishnah is also lacking this step over here of the pounding. And that's why Rabbi Elazar, the Amora, didn't think that the Tana of our Mishnah is Rabbi Shmuel, because he thought the case of our Mishnah, even Rabbi Shmuel would say, is not allowed. That's why he gave that it's the Tana of Rabbi Elazar. Ma'isa Shahaya came in front of Rabbi Yossi ben Chanina, and Hor Rabbi Yossi ben Chanina came Rabbi Shmuel. He paskin not only in theory like this, but he paskin in fact in a real case like the opinion of Rabbi Yishmuel. We continue discussing some other dinim related to an olive press. Gemara says, Shemen Shobad Dodim, if you have over here oil. Rashi explains the Shemen Shobad Dodim is, since I did it, I revived Sabbat, since we talked about one halach of the olive press, Nokat Le Shemen Hamishtaya Bezavios Habat. He tells us another halacha, and this deals with the oil that's left behind in the corners of the olive press, Tachasatino, underneath the beams that press it down. And this was given as like a tip, as a reward, Funitan Le Badodim. It was given over to the people that pressed over here. That's why it's called Shemin Bal Badodin. And likewise, V'chei Machat Solu Shel Badodin, they had certain mats over here that they used as well, Shemachasim and Esazim, that they would cover up the Zazim. So these oils that were left in these mats, so these oils over here, Shemin Shel Badodin, Machat Solu Shel Badodin, so Rav Osar, Rav said that these are Muktzah, you're not allowed to move them on Shabbos, and Shmuel Shari, Shmuel said they're not Muktzah, you're allowed to move them on Shabbos. Gemara will explain in a moment that this is all totally on the machlokus, the famous machlokus, the shas machlokus. We can find this many times in Masechet Shabbos as to whether muktza exists or doesn't exist, to what extent. So we have the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda that's much more machmir. He says that muktza is almost anything that doesn't have a direct usage on Shabbos. And Rabbi Shimon says no, that there is no concept of muktza except for something that is totally out of your mind. Now we're not going to have this discussion in great detail today, we're just going to mention it, but we're going to go later on the Masechet, we're going to have a lot of discussions about this famous Machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda, who holds for Muktza. That's the way we explain it. Rabbi Yehuda holds for Muktza, and Rabbi Shimon doesn't hold for Muktza. In fact, Rabbi Yehuda says that there are things that aren't Muktza too, and Rabbi Shimon holds that there are things that are Muktza. But this is how we normally phrase this Machlokas. Rabbi Shimon says no Muktza, and Rabbi Yehuda says there is Muktza. Similarly, we have another machlokes between Rav and Shmuel, same idea. Hanikrache de zuze. You have over here these certain types of pairs of mats. Rashi explains over here, zug shel machatzolos, a pair of mats that they used to cover up the merchandise that they had on the boats. And he says, Zuze is a lashon of a zug, a pair, because there are two of them. Then he brings out another pshat that it's ziyove, not zuze, which means a sfina in lashon arami. An Aramaic word for sfina is a ziyove. In any event, so they also had the same machlokas. Rav says that these mats are also they're muktza. Ushmul says they're shari, they're not considered muktza. Rav says they're muktza because they're used to cover up the merchandise, so they have no other purpose, and therefore they're muktza on Shabbos. And Shmuel says, no, they could be used for something else, so therefore, like Rabbi Shimon, he says they're not muktza. Similarly, we have another machlokes. Amar Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman said, "Eiz lechalava." If you have a goat that's normally used for its milk, so it's not expected to be shechted on Yontif because you're using it as a milk goat. But Rachel agrees also, and likewise, you have a sheep. Now, it could be eaten on Yontif. You'll have to shecht on Yontif. But since they were planning on using it for its wool, they weren't planning on shechting on Yontif. Likewise, it's time to go. This little bait sauce. If you have a chicken over here, that's a hen that lays eggs, so you're using it for its eggs and not to shecht it. Visari diridya. And likewise, if you have an ox over here that's used for plowing and it's not normally used for food, so all of these things technically could be eaten on Yontif, because you technically could shecht all of them. And likewise with Tamrei Deitzka, and if you have over here dates that were intended to be used for some sort of a business, so for example, you're selling them for animal food, or you're going to sell them to people to eat, whatever, so it's a business type of a date as opposed to something that you're planning on eating. So all five of these items over here, there's a question of muktz on them, because they're not really made for Yontif eating. So Rav is also, Rav says like Rav Yehuda, that they're muktz. Ushmul amar muktz. Nope, since you could eat them, they're not considered muktz. And all of this, these three sets of cases, the Gemara says, the review of the Rebbe Shimon, as I've already pointed out, this is the famous machlokas, Yehuda holds muktza, and Rebbe Shimon holds no muktza. Now, one time there was a Talmud, how Tamid, the Ori B'charta, the Argiz, there wasn't once a Talmud who lived in the city known as Charta the Argiz. Argiz was the guy that founded this town, Charta is the name of the place, so it was known as Charta the Argiz. And anyway, this Talmud over here, in this locale of Charta the Argiz, he paskin to Rabbi Shimon. And what did they do? Shanti Rav Nuna. Rav Nuna put him into Cherim, this Talmud for paskining like, over here, the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. Mora says, how come? We, in fact, pasuk like Rabbi Shimon. So how come Rav Nuna put him into Chayrim? That's not right. So Mora says, no. The Asri de Rav Haba. This was a city within Rav's domain, Rav's locale. And therefore, you're not allowed to go pasuk against the Mora de Asri of the town. And Loi Boi Leilim Eved Hochi. Shouldn't have done so. A similar story, Gemara says, where a Talmud didn't ask appropriately how he should do. So, Hani Tre Talmidim, there were other times, two of these Talmidim, Chad Matzel B'chod Mon V'chad Matzel B'ar B'chomish Moneh. We're going to learn later on in the Masechta that if there's Rechmon al-San of fire, so there's a concern that you're going to carry out stuff. You're only allowed to carry out in a certain way. So some say you're allowed to carry out only one basket worth of food for the rest of that Shabbos, and others say, no, you can combine them into many baskets and just bring out one large basket. That's allowed. So each of these Talmidim followed a different Shita, and this was actually Kamifli Gebefluk, so the Rabba Bar Zabda Rabun. And this is a Machlokas, we'll learn later on in the Masechta between these two great Amoraim. And the point, I'm assuming, that they connected this over here is just like the previous Talmud didn't ask, he just did, so too these Talmidim, they didn't ask. They each did something else, but they should this. How do we paskin over here? That's what they should have done. Next Mishnah. Eitzol and Basa, Batzel and Beitza. We already alluded to this Mishnah in the previous Gemaras. We said you're not allowed to go and roast meat or an onion, Batzel, or a Beitza, or an egg on Erev Shabbos. Why? Because it's again a concern that you're going to keep on roasting it on Shabbos and you're going to stir the fire. But you are allowed to do this Elikadesha Yitzolim Mibojom as long as you finished roasting it before the day was over. So if you finished roasting it on Erev Shabbos, there is no problem. So you're only allowed to roast it on Erev Shabbos if you can finish it before Shabbos starts. Likewise, Einostim Paslatana Rim Chashecho, you're likewise not allowed to go put bread into an oven right before Shabbos starts. And likewise, you're not allowed to go put Velo Charora Agabi Gecholim, you're not allowed to go put the Uga, Rashi says Ugas with Sofim, it's a certain type of dough over here. And you're not allowed to go put that in the oven as well. You can't put it right on the coals on Erev Shabbos. Neither of these two is allowed to be done unless it reaches a certain stage. Until you have over here a crust forming, a krum. You have a crust forming on it, so then it's cooked enough so that it's considered that you're not going to go and do something to it on Shabbos, and therefore it's allowed. That's the opinion of the Tanakhama. Rebelezer Omer, I disagree a little bit. He says, Kadesh Yikro Matachton Shalah. He says, it's not that the whole thing has to get a crust on it, it's only the bottom part, the Tachton part that has to get a crust on it. The Gemara will say, what does it mean, the bottom part? Next, the Mishnah says, Mishaushalin Sapesa Batana Rim Chashecha. You're allowed to go and lower down. Mishaushalin means to lower down like by a rope or something. So you're allowed to lower your Korban Pesach into the oven on Erev Shabbos when the first night of the Seder is Friday night on Shabbos. So you're not allowed to cook it on Shabbos. So you go cook it Erev Shabbos. You shecht it Erev Shabbos. and you go and cook it on Erev Shabbos. You start the cooking, and as long as you put it into the oven on Erev Shabbos, you're okay. The Gemara will explain why. And likewise, you're allowed to go start lighting the fire in the chamber in the Beis HaMikdash known as the Beis HaMokah. That was a big chamber where the Kohanim would go. And the other chambers were inside of it, but they would go there to warm themselves up. They were walking on the barefoot. And sometimes it was cold out there on the marble floor. And they would go there and heat their feet up, heat their bodies up from the fires of this Beis HaMokah. And you're allowed to do this also on Erev Shabbos, close to Shabbos. Before Shabbos starts, it's not a problem. Nobody made Xer in this situation. We'll explain why. Turn to the Amud Aleph, Chof Amud Aleph, Ubi Gvulin, and likewise in the borders outside of the Beis HaMikdash, there you can't do this. Kidei Shetochaz or Berubo. You have to wait till much more of the fire has been caught, it lit on Erev Shabbos, in order for you to leave it and let it be lit on Shabbos. Go through and be lit on Shabbos. Yehuda Omer bebecham koshu. He says, however, you're dealing with coals, then you don't have to do a lot. As long as the coals are caught, even if most of them aren't caught, they're not going to go out. You don't have to go and stir them, and therefore it's not a problem. Morris starts and says, Kama, when we said you have to roast it before Shabbos, so it reached a certain point of roasting, right? When we said in the Mishnah, Kadesha Yitzolu Mibo Jom, how much does that have to be? So we learn now the famous din, Amar Elazar Rav, Kadesha Yitzolu Mibo Jom, Kemaychel Ben Drosoy. It has to be roasted enough that it reached the stage that this ganav, known as Ben Drosoy, would go and eat it. Kemaychel Ben Drosoy. The Mefarshim explained that he was always in a rush. He was on the lamb, so he was always eating very, very quickly. So therefore, he would eat it, according to Rashi, even if it was only one-third roasted, according to the Rambam, the famous Machlokas, it would have to be a half roasted in any event. So once it reached that point, it's considered that it's roasted enough to be eaten, so therefore people aren't going to come and adjust it on Shabbos, and therefore you can cook it to that extent on Erev Shabbos and not have a concern. We like what we learned in the Beis Medrash. Amar Ravasi, Amar Rav Yochanan, he said in the name of Yochanan, Kol Shu Kimayach Ben Drosoy. As long as it's reached the stage of Ben Drosoy, Ein Bo Mishum Bishuli Ach Nochum. In regards to the din of Bishul Akum, you're not allowed to go and eat something that's choshev, that is cooked by a guy. So he says, as long as you cooked it to the Mayach Ben Drosoy levels, and even if the guy finishes cooking it, that's not a problem of Bishul Akum anymore. Similarly, we learn in the Braisa, Tanya, Chanan Yomer, there's a famous machlokes we'll learn about cooking coming up soon. For now, we just allude to it right here. The famous Tana's opinion, Hananya's opinion, Koshu Kamaichel Ben Drosoy. Once it's cooked to the stage of Maichel Ben Drosoy, Mutal Ashosu Agabi Kira. Then you can put it on top of the oven, even on Shabbos. And Biafa Pisha and Grufa Ktuma, even though this oven doesn't have over here a blech on it. Like Grufa Ktuma means, Rashi explains, Gerufa Goruf min ha-gicholim, you've swept away the coals, the makrefa, with some sort of a shovel, Shekor and Vadili. And kotu means that you spread out ashes, mefazu and ephraim, ilamala, kedila hafi chomo, and it will cool off the coals a little bit over here, and therefore you're going to remind yourself that you don't want to adjust it. In both of these situations, you've moved the coals away or you've covered up the coals. That's the equivalent of our blech that will remind you that you're not allowed to go and do something to them on Shabbos. So this Braisa says, once it's reached the amount of Michael Bar Dursai, so then you don't even have to do this. Then the Mishnah says, Enos and Esapas, we brought down the other two examples. You're not allowed to go and put the pas over here into the oven, Erev Shabbos, or put these like pieces of bread that are the harara, the dough, onto the oven as well, unless it reaches the point, the Tanakhama said, where it has a crust. And Rabbi Elazar said, it has to be the bottom have a crust. So Yibai Luda, he asked, when Rabbi Elazar says over here, the bottom, what did he mean? Tachton, hech, the gabi tanur, did he mean that the part that's flat up against the tanur, they used to put the dough against the walls of the tanner. So does it mean the part that's touching the tanner? Odilma tachton hech de gabiar. Or does it mean the facing out part, not the part that's against the wall, but the part that is against the open fire? So Gemara says, Toshma bring another brisa that shows the answer. Relezer omer kidei shikru paneh hamedubakim betanner. It's talking about the part of the dough that's touch flush up against the wall. So that amount has to be krum. That has to have a crust on it. But the other side doesn't have to. And the Tanakhama said, no, the other side has to have the crust as well. The simple understanding is that the Tanakhama is giving us a lenient opinion compared to the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. Because the Tanakhama says that if only one side is already crusted, that's enough to say that you can cook it on Shabbos, on Erev Shabbos. You don't have to worry about it. And Rabbi Eliezer says, no, it has to even be crusted on the inner side, which is more difficult. Others disagree and say the exact opposite. But that's a simple pshat over here. Then we quote the Mishnah, which says, Mishashanas a Pesach. You're allowed to go and lower the Pesach into the oven on Erev Pesach before Shabbos starts. How come? My timer. So Gemara says, Mishum de Bnei Chabur is Rizenheim. Because you have over here an entire group. Nobody eats a Korban Pesach by themselves. They eat it in a group. And even if one person is going to forget himself, the other people are going to remind them that you're not allowed to do anything. Gemara implies, Halav Hachi Lo. That would imply that if you didn't have the other people over there, you wouldn't be allowed to lower a Gdi, a goat, into the fire on Erev Pesach, because you're afraid that you're going to come to adjust the calls. We said previously, we just learned in Yesterday Shiva, Omer Rav Gadja ben Shrik ben Lo Shrik Shaper Domi. Rav Ashi had brought down that if you have the goat over here, whether the oven is closed, whether the oven is not closed, we're not concerned about goat, because anytime you let some wind come in, it's going to ruin the goat from cooking. And here we seem to be not concerned about that, and therefore we say that if it wasn't for the fact that the din over here, the Bnei Chabura, is going to be his reason, we wouldn't allow you to do this. Why not? We're not concerned normally with goat. Gemara says, no, there's a difference. Hasam, when we say that we're not concerned about a goat, it's because it's mintach, it's cut up into little pieces, and the wind will ruin it. But hach, when it's an entire goat, you're not allowed to cut up the korban pesach, so lo mintach, it's not going to get ruined by a little bit of wind, and therefore here we would be concerned if it wasn't for the fact that the Bnei Chabura are watching it. Then we said, you're allowed to, in the Beis HaMokad, as long as it lit a little bit, you don't have to worry about that you come to adjust it on Shabbos. The Gemara says, Minani Mili, how come that's true? So Amar Rav Huna, the Pasuk says, Lo Sivaru Eish B'chol Moshe V'Seichem. He says it's based upon a Pasuk. The Pasuk says, in your house, B'chol Moshe V'Seichem, Yet HaMavir, you're not allowed to do this. However, Apto Mavir, Mibidura, it's Beis HaMokad, but you can do it in the Beis HaMikdash. Word says that's not right. Maskev Lo Rechis. The Rechis says, wait a second. If that's true, Afilu B'Shabbos Nami, then you should be allowed to do this on Shabbos. If it's based upon the pasuk, it says in your house you can't light a fire, but in the Beis Hamikdash you can. So you should be allowed to light a fire even in the Beis Hamikdash, and that's of course not true. So the Gemara says, Rav Chisda learns this pasuk as follows. Elom Rav Chisda, Kerah, Kiyosu L'mishre, Evarim, Vidarim, Hudiyosa. This pasuk is, Lo Sivar, Reish, V'chomash, V'sechem, means that you're allowed to go and burn the Evarim and the Vidarim on Shabbos. It's a mitzvah. Like, you're allowed to shech the Shabbos, you're allowed to put them up on Shabbos, even though you could do them, let's say Shabbos, but you're allowed to do them on Shabbos. That's what you need the pasuk for. Lo Sivar, Reish, V'chomash, V'sechem. In your houses, you can't cook, but in the Beis HaMikdash, you're allowed to cook on Shabbos, a carbon that is mechuyev to be done on Shabbos. So then, how do we know over here that you're allowed to go and light the fire in the Beis HaMokad, even though it's not fully lit? He says, the reason why, Kohanim's reason name. It's similar to the Korban Pesach, just like at the Bnei Chabur that are going to be his reason, and they'll make sure that no one individual goes and does something that you're not allowed to do. So too, in the Beis HaMikdash, with all the Kohanim over there, we're not concerned that one of them is going to do something wrong, because if he's about to, the other Kohanim will stop him. Then we quote the Mishnah that says, in the cities and the places outside of the Beis HaMikdash, then you have to make sure that the fire is caught on enough that it's not going to go out, because we're afraid that if it's going to look like it's going to go out, you may forget yourself and do it on Shabbos. So we said it has to have most of the fire caught. My Reuben, what do we mean by most? So I'm a Rav, Rov Kolecha B'Yechad. It means the majority of each and every piece of firewood that has to be burned in order for you to not be concerned about it. And Shmuel disagrees. As long as it's enough that you don't need to bring more little kindling twigs to go and make it flame up. But lavdafka, that every single one has to be, rov kolecha v'yechad has to be on fire ready. It's enough if most of them, if a bunch of them are, that you won't have to bring more kindling wood. We have a brice in support of what Shmuel said. Tana Rabbi Chiya Seir Shmuel. Now Rabbi Chiya was actually much older than Shmuel. He was the uncle of Rav. So Rabbi Chiya himself didn't bring this brice officially to support Shmuel. It just is a brisa that is in support of Shmuel. So this is the, he says in the brisa that you have to have enough that the flame comes up on its own. Not that you have to add additional kindling twigs. So therefore, in this situation, this brisa supports Shmuel, that you just have to have enough that it's not going to be a need for you to restart the fire, so to say. Now, another similar idea, Eitz Yechidi, if a single piece of wood, you have a big block of wood, so Rav Amar, when do you know that it's lit enough? So Rov Oviv, you have to have most of the thickness of the block of wood over here before you can say that it's going to light on its own. And others say, Yarmilei, Rov Hakepo, it has to be most of the circumference of the block over here. So how do we paskin on Rapapa? Since we're not sure, Hilkach, Binan, Rov, Avyo, you need the thickness, most of the thickness, as well as Ubinan, Rov, Hekefo. You need most of the circumference as well. You need both of them. And this is, in fact, the Machlokas Tanoim, Kitanoi. Rav Chiya says, you need to have Kadei Sheh Yishochei Sa'etz Mimlechas Uman, that it no longer will be able to be used by a professional carpenter, by an artisan over here, that it's too far burnt that he wouldn't want to use it. Rav Yehuda ben Seirah says, Kadesh Yochai Tochaz Ha'esh Mishneitz Nodim, that it's on both sides over here. So this is the same machlokas that we just had, Ruban or Hekefan. The Alpha Pishet Raila Dover, and Rav Yehuda ben Seirah says, even though I don't have a real support for what I'm saying, I have an asmachta from a pasuk Zechla Dover, from the pasuk that we bring down from Yecheskel, where it says over there, Eish Shnei Kitzosav, the two sides, Ochla Eish, Hayitzlach Locha, can an Uman then use it? It won't be good for work. So he brings a Raya, that's what it is. It's only an asmachta, because it's not talking about real wood. There it's talking about Klai Yisrael. Similarly, we bring down another pasuk. This pasuk is from Yirmiyahu. The S ha'och lefana mivo ares. What does this och mean? My och. So it's burning. This och is burning. What does it mean? Och. On the rab, it says achvona. It means a willow, an arava. That's what achvona means. Ushmul amar etzim shenidukum beachvona. It means no. It doesn't mean that. It means an arava. It means over here brotherhood. It means a bunch of sticks that are together. That's what it means. Achvona. We have a raya to Rav's opinion. How Darmalu, the once is a person who said to another person, "Man buy achvana? Who wants to buy my achvana? I'm selling achvana." And they went to see what he was selling. Ishtachach arvasa. He was selling arvas over here. He was selling willows, and therefore that shows that Rav is correct. That's what the common usage of the word arava was. Achvana was. It was an arava. Amravuna kani main tzrichim rov. If you have individual pieces over here of reeds, of kona, so you don't need the fire to catch on to rove of them. It's enough if it catches on to some of them, because when some of them are lit, it's going to light up all the others. That's if they're loose. However, agadon, if they're all bundled together, tzrichin rove, then you do have to have most of them caught on fire before you can light this on Erev Shabbos and leave it alone and not be concerned that you come to go and light it on Shabbos because it goes out. And the reasoning is because when they're bundled together, the fire can't get inside well. It's somewhat protective of the bundle. As opposed to if they're loose, then once one lights, the other's going to light as well. But the din is by garinin, by seeds, ein tzrichin rov. You also don't need to have rov, the seeds, because they're very flammable. But nesonim besocholos, if you put them in some sort of a basket, so then they're not as flammable, tzrichin rov. Then most of them have to be caught on fire. That's the opinion of Rav Huna. Rav Chisda says the exact opposite. Maskev Rav Chisda, he says, adirabba ifcha mistavi, he says the exact opposite makes more sense. When they're all spread out, konim mibadron, so then in that situation, you have to have most of them go and lit on fire because they're separate from each other. I got the lomi vajra. But if in fact they are all tied together, so then you don't need all of them. You just need some of them because once the fire is lit, it's going to go out and get and burn up all the other ones because they're all bundled together. Likewise, garina and mivadran. If the pits, which are very flammable, were scattered all over the place, then most of them have to be on fire because just because one is on fire, it's not going to make the other get on fire. And the son of Israel calls, but he put it in the basket. Now they're all together, lomi vajra. They won't separate and they'll all be flammable together. So this is the two opinions. Rav Huna and Rav Chisda are diametrically opposed. Now we turn to Yomid Beis. In Manami, we have another opinion that says Rav Kahana holds a little bit like Rav Huna for the first case, and he holds like Rav Chisda for the second group. Konim sha'agod and srichim rov. Lo agod and srichim rov, exactly like Rav Huna, Rashi says. But the other way, garin and srichim rov, and the son of Misocholos and srichim rov, he holds exactly like Rav Chisda just said. So this is a compromise shita. Finally, we conclude the parak. Tani Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef says, "Arba meduros ein shichem rov." There are four types of flammable types of flames that are made from wood with something on them that are going to burn so well that you don't have to worry that most of them are caught on fire. If you lit them on Erev Shabbos, that's definitely going to burn. You don't have to worry that you can come to adjust the flame on Shabbos, so to say. And these are wood that is with shozefes, which is a certain type of a pitch. Others have the opinion over here that this is gefes. Vishal gofris, which is sulfur. Vishal gina, which is cheese. Others have the gears over here, kira, which is wax. And vishal revav, which is grease. All of these, when they're on wood, are going to make it very flammable. You don't have to have most of them lit. As long as you have some of them lit, it's going to take off. The Masisa Tana, we learn in the Braisa, avshal kash, vishal gvarva. So too, if you have kashu gvarva, this is known as like straw and stubble, they too will be very flammable, and if not most of it is lit, as long as some of it's lit, it's going to burn well. Rav Yochanan, eitz and shel bavel in shichim rov, the wood in bavel is also very flammable, and even if it is only part of it, you don't need most of it, it will be perfectly fine. Masav Rav Yossi says, wait a second, Maihi, what exactly is this eitz and shel bavel that Rav Yochanan talked about? Ilema silti, if you're telling me it's something called silti, Rashi says, La'achar she'asom eitzim dakim u'bavol no'agim kein, they would chop it up into very small little pieces of wood. Is that what you're talking about? Hashta basila, even a wick, which we're going to learn in Mitzvah Shem, we're coming up with an empirical by Mem Adlikin. Amarula Ula said, Hamadlik tzor she'adlik barov hayotze, you have to light most of it because it's not very, very flammable. And therefore, if that's what this is talking about, it's certainly not going to be very flammable. So silti mevaya, would you tell me that even if the wicks don't light well, would they're in oil? So certainly this wood's not going to light very well unless you get most of it lit. So you're right, the Gemara says, Alam Rav Yosef, you know what this is talking about? This Eitzim Shel Bavel, it's talking about something that is either pronounced Socha, in some places with a sin, and in some places it's with a shin. So it's Shocha the Ares, it's a certain type of a wood, of a branch, of a cedar tree, of an Ares, and that is what it refers to as Eitzim Shel Bavel. They burn very well. And Rabbi Barabba Amar Zova, it's referring to something called Zova. Rashi says a foreign word that is translated as moss. With this, we conclude the first parak of Gemara Shabbos, Hadron L'Chitzios Shabbos, Hadron L'Chitzios Shabbos, Hadron L'Chitzios Shabbos, and we conclude today's shir.